You're listening to a UC San Diego podcast.
Okay. Hello? Let's get going. So, just wanted to start with a few announcements. Obviously, today I'm going to talk about recommender systems, which I announced on Piazza. Hopefully, that's why everyone showed up. The reason I wanted to do this, rather than talking about some more advanced models like graphical models or anything, is because I want to release the assignment as soon as possible, and I want to make sure everything that's going to be covered in the assignment is going to be covered before the midterm, all right? Because there's not actually that many classes during week 7 and week 8 when the assignment is due, because there's one class that's missed, there's one midterm, there's Veterans Day. So I want to make sure you have everything you need in order to get started. As soon as the midterm is finished, you'll be working hard on the assignment right away, I have no doubt. So I'm going to give that out on Wednesday. It's going to be due in week 8, so 4 weeks later. So I want to cover the relevant material right away, which means we do recommender systems this week, and next week we do probably most of text mining, at least everything we need to complete the assignment. We can do midterm revisions and things if people want those. I don't know. Is that something people are interested in? No. Yes? Okay. We'll do some midterm revisions Wednesday next week. As for the midterm, I did put last quarter's midterm on the course webpage. That is the undergraduate midterm. There hasn't been a graduate midterm before. So expect it to be the same flavor of problem, but it will be more difficult. I mean, obviously there'll be some intersection, but there'll be several more hard questions on the graduate midterm. But in terms of what you ought to know to do well in the midterm, in terms of how much you need to spend your time understanding mathematical proofs versus sort of understanding the motivation behind the algorithms, definitely the latter is what I want the midterm to focus on. I think the past midterm did. The past midterm was a bit too easy to tell the truth. Everyone kind of aced it. So expect it to be a little bit tougher. We'll do some revision. I'll give out some more example questions, so on and so forth. Okay? So as for advanced topics that I thought I might have covered this week, we'll see what we can get in week 9. Okay? I still want to keep temporal models in the last week just because they're a great way of basically going back through all of the past material and adding a temporal component to it. But week 9, we'll hopefully have a little bit of time left over to do some graphical models, maybe doing some methods for online advertising, which I think is one of the topics that I didn't cover before, which people voted the most highly for. What other announcements are there? The other big one is about the microphone. I guess it's cut out a couple of times. I talked to ACMs about this. They said they think the battery is just running out at some point in the middle of the lecture. This is plausible. I would have thought I would have noticed this, but if it seems as though I am not being broadcast over the speakers, can somebody please let me know, because it's happened for a whole lecture and apparently I've just yelled louder and not realized I was doing so. So just tell me, I'll put a new battery in, that way it'll make it to the podcast, okay? All right, so what are we doing? We're doing recommender systems. Recommender systems are something we maybe feel like we've been looking at since the very first week, since I motivated a whole bunch of these regression and classification problems with tasks like predicting people's ratings of movies, or predicting their purchases, or predicting their click-through behavior. These are essentially the kind of tasks that recommender systems solve, although the kind of way we're going to solve them in this week is going to have a different spin on it to how we've been solving them with things like regression and with things like classification approaches that we've seen so far. So basic task of a recommender system, well, there are a few. So one is to help people find new content. So these are some real recommendations provided when I visited Amazon. Can anyone guess what I had just watched on Amazon? Yeah, I'd watched G.I. Joe 2 Rise of Cobra. Okay, and it's a piece of junk, but I didn't enter a rating for it. So as far as Amazon, I made it to the end of the film, I guess. They know that much. So as far as they're concerned, they maybe should recommend me some other superhero movies. So they're recommending me other things I might enjoy based on my interests. That's one of the tasks of a recommender system. Another task might be to just find content that, to help you find content you're already looking for. So if I click on or if I watch or if I give a high rating to Harry Potter, you know, these are some recommendations that Amazon also provides when I visit this page. They say, okay, you're clicking on Harry Potter 1, maybe you like Harry Potter 2, maybe you like Harry Potter 3, maybe you like Harry Potter 4, maybe you like Harry Potter 5, maybe you like Harry Potter 6, maybe you like Harry Potter 7, part 1 of 2, maybe you like Harry Potter 7, part 2 of 2. So, I don't know. Are those good recommendations, or are they terrible recommendations? I think it kind of depends, right? It depends on what do you think is the purpose of the recommender system. Is the recommender system to help you find things you like? Is it to help you discover new things? Is its purpose to stop you shutting down your Amazon account? Or is its purpose just as some kind of user interface feature, which is kind of what it is here? Obviously, Harry Potter is something you're very likely to click on. You already know of its existence. And in this case, maybe the recommender system's job is just to act as a very convenient user interface, puts what you were already going to click on in a very prominent position. Okay, something else we can do with the recommender system, like we saw in the case study a few lectures ago, is to find notions like compatibility between items. So Amazon says, based on the fact that you're looking at these jeans, if you buy them, maybe you're also likely to buy this shirt. So it's a very simple notion of pairwise compatibility that says these two items are similar in terms of the sets of users who purchase them. Very simple notion of similarity. And in this case, the goal of the recommender system is to find sets or pairs of things that, in some sense, go together. Another basic task of a recommender system is to personalize some kind of user experience. So this, I think, is Pandora. It's not my Pandora, by the way. It's just a screenshot. But they have these thumbs up and thumbs down buttons. You click on those. It somehow updates the playlist it recommends to you. And who knows how, but they want to suggest a playlist that will maximize the frequency with which you press thumbs up rather than thumbs down. So they're somehow personalizing experience to you based on your past feedback. That's a task of a recommender system. The other one is maybe recommending these things. Okay, so based on your apparent interest in Within Temptation and Epica, maybe you like Starburst Cherry. So discovering that kind of relationship, that's something we'll hopefully look at a bit more if we have time to cover advertising in week 9. But it's also a kind of recommender system. And finally, the really basic one is just to identify things that you like. So the Netflix recommender system is a very simple one. They want to recommend you a movie. They'd like to surface in a prominent position on the UI, movies that you're likely to give a high rating, but they'd actually also like to predict your rating and tell it to you. Maybe you're in the mood for a 3-star movie tonight. So part of their recommender system is actually to predict your rating and surface it back to the user. So I don't know. There's all these different, very subtly different kinds of applications that are all tasks that you could say are recommender systems. They're suggesting items to a user, either to maximize clicks, minimize dropout, maximize revenue, generate sequences of playlists, build a convenient user interface, whatever you like. They seem like maybe very subtly different things that we should treat independently, but really I'd say they're all kind of one basic framework of model. What we really need is a good model of people's preferences and their behavior. So if we can predict, given a user item pair, Will they purchase it? And if they purchase it, will they give it a high rating? If we can build the perfect black box that solves that problem, then, I mean, all of these other applications, they're essentially just design choices. You know, whether I should try to come up with diverse sets of recommendations, should I try and recommend things you like, or should I recommend things that will help you discover a new category of products in order for longevity on the website, whatever. It doesn't really matter. But for all of these tasks, you want some black box that you can query that says, if I recommend this item next, what's the user going to do? Are they going to select it? And if so, are they going to evaluate it as being good or bad? So really, that's what we're going to study. We're going to try and solve this kind of modeling task. I think we can sort of keep working with this very basic version. We're given a user, we're given an item. We want to predict the rating the user is going to give to the item. And then the sort of simplest recommender system you can come up with on that basis would just say, all right, let's put the items that I think the user will rate highest first in the UI. Hopefully those are the ones the person's going to click on. So, you know, we've been looking at this genre of task ever since week one with good old linear regression. The way we would be able to solve this at the moment would be to construct some features that describe the user. We could construct some features that describe the movie, and then we could train something like, I don't know, linear regression to minimize the mean squared error given a bunch of user features, movie features, and historical star ratings that those users and those movies have given and received. And, you know, we can think of all the different user and movie features we can use. We can talk about these arrows should go in the other direction, I suppose. We have movie features like the rating, the length, the actors involved, the genre of the movie. We have user features like, I don't know, gender, age, location, or even other features like what time is the rating being entered. And we can use these to train some simple linear predictor. So what could you do? You can have predictors that account for all these different kind of things. Do women give more generous ratings than men? Do Americans give more generous ratings than Australians? Are some genres just generally preferred over others? Or do people who rate action movies just tend to have a different rating scale than people who rate drama? Seasonal effects, like if you throw the timestamp into your predictor, can we say whether there's some trend for people to give over-generous ratings during summer, or even does a single particular actor influence the ratings positively or negatively? So we're training some complicated model that says, given all of these features that are basically about user demographics and item properties, can we say which of those features is positively correlated or negatively correlated with rating? That's what we have so far. So what don't we have so far? Why is the problem of recommender systems remotely worth studying? So this is what we can do, right? We can build some feature vector that describes users and items, and some parameter vector which says which of those features are relevant or irrelevant. Now, this is a linear model, which means I can do this. I can say that's actually equal to theta for the user. The features for the user times the theta for the user plus the features for the item times the parameters for the item. Okay, so it's a linear model, which just means I can decompose it into these two parts. I have these, essentially, I'm treating these as though they're two completely independent predictors, as though there's no interaction between the user and the item. Really, all I can measure from a predictor like this, which is what we've seen so far, is this user generous or stingy with their ratings, based on their demographics? And is this movie just overall a good or a bad movie? There's no notion of here of whether somehow that movie is personally compatible with the user, right? So if you think about it as a ranking task, which is what I wanted to solve, I want to surface the items that a user is going to rate highest on this UI. This model can't do that because the ranking is going to be exactly the same for every single user. They're going to be offset by a different amount because of this user term, but you're just going to recommend, I don't know, what's the best movie to everyone? Die Hard. Yeah, Die Hard gets top rank for every single person. Die Hard 2 gets second top rank. There's no personalization, right? That's essentially the problem with this model, and that is the the role of a recommender system. It is model these interactions between users and items to not treat them as their independent objects. In other words, to personalize the model. So yeah, this is about all we're able to capture so far. Do people give high ratings and do movies receive high ratings? And we just add those two things together to predict a non-personalized user's rating of a movie. Yeah, so this is what's missing. We'd like to say, how can we come up with some complicated sort of pairwise feature that models the interaction between me and, I don't know, this particular genre or something important about this movie? Do I rate movies that belong to this genre differently from the way other users rate movies that belong to this genre? So that's what recommender systems are doing. They're going beyond the sort of independent linear models that we've seen so far and saying, can we actually identify complex relationships between people and the content they're consuming? That is basically the job of personalizing. So really what we'd like is to find something along the lines of dimensions that explain why different people evaluate things differently. So what would be relevant dimensions for movies? I don't know, maybe the genre, the quality of the special effects, the presence or absence of particularly important actors. I don't know, we'd like to discover these things automatically. But you can imagine we'd find things like, okay, special effects is an action movie. These would be the important properties of a movie which would somehow explain the variation in people's ratings of that movie. And in parallel to that, we want to find the preferences of the user, which basically says, do they respond positively or negatively to each of those properties? So does this person like or dislike action movies? And that's going to give us a natural measure of the compatibility between these two things. So we're really embedding items and we're embedding users into some low-dimensional space such that people like things that are similar to their embedding. We're measuring the compatibility between the user and the item in order to make predictions. Hopefully that'll all become clear later. But that's essentially what recommender systems are about and why they're different from things like linear models, because they're really about personalization and modeling these relationships between users and items and automatically discovering what are the important dimensions that explain why different people evaluate things differently. Okay, so what are we going to cover? We'll talk about collaborative filtering today, which is it's going to be a set of measures of similarity that allow us to say, should I consider two users to be similar based on their past behavior in terms of what items they've purchased? And should I consider two items to be similar based on the sets of users who purchased them? It's essentially sort of a way to do recommendation that consists of constructing some reasonable similarity function. And on Wednesday, I think we can cover quite a bit of latent factor models today. We won't quite finish it. And this is the idea I was just describing, where we're trying to project users and items to some low-dimensional space. So it's essentially this dimensionality reduction approach to learning what are the dimensions that explain the variance in how people rate items differently. Two other things. Wednesday I'll talk about assignment one and also the Netflix prize, which I'll just introduce today, but actually talk about how did people solve this on Wednesday. These things are going to be fairly highly related because assignment one is basically a mini Netflix prize. No money involved, but similar data set. We're going to look at, I think, how people rate books on Amazon and whether people's ratings are helpful or so forth. So it's basically going to be a big recommender systems type challenge with some text processing thrown in there, which will come up next week. Okay, so firstly, collaborative filtering. We want to come up with some good similarity measures that take this sort of user item purchase rating data and say, are two users similar or are two items similar based on the previous interactions between users and items? So how would you say where the two users are similar to each other? Well, we don't know yet, but we're going to say that's some sort of function of what items those users purchased. How do we say if two items are similar? Yeah, we're going to say in terms of the users who purchased them. So two sort of symmetric definitions. And this is essentially how Amazon's recommender system is built. they're trying to come up with some notion of similarity between items. So this type of recommendation you see when you click on some pair of pants and they say people who viewed this also viewed, people who bought this also bought, that's not a personalized recommender system at all, right? It's just sort of population level notion of similarity. They're trying to come up with some function that says, what are the items that are maximally similar to this pair of jeans in terms of viewing behavior and in terms of purchasing behavior? So it's not personalized. It just depends on having a good notion of similarity between items, but that will be defined in terms of population level viewing and purchasing data. And I'll describe to you exactly how this works in a few slides' time. Okay, so a few obvious definitions. We'll say I sub U is the set of items that a user U purchased. U sub I is the set of users who purchased an item I. So I think every time I use these two terms, it'll be unambiguous what they mean in case you can't remember that photographically. But really what we have, another way of thinking about it, is we have this huge matrix that captures all historical user item interactions, whether they're purchases or thumbs up or thumbs down or rating data or whatever you like. In this case, it could just be binary feedback about purchases. So we have a matrix where every row is a user and every column is an item. So RU is a binary representation, kind of a feature vector that describes a particular user in terms of all the items they've purchased. R column, I, is then just the set of all users who purchased item I. So what we said on the previous slide is that, you know, these can just, our set of users who, a set of items purchased by you can be defined in terms of this matrix. I, given that, what has happened to my pen? Can someone explain? I have no idea. It's very thick. Okay, we have a very thick pen tonight. No one can explain this to me. No one has one of these? Okay, it doesn't matter. Just, I guess we'll bear with it. And U of I is the set of users such that, this is horrible, UI equals 1. This is no good at all. Is there gunk on my pen? Look, I don't know. Can anyone read this? It's okay. I apologize. So yeah, we can define these two sets, IU and UI, in terms of this matrix, this binary matrix of purchases. Okay, so the simplest way we could then measure similarity between, Jesus Christ, Microsoft. Simplest way we could define similarity between users and items is just something like the Euclidean distance. Okay, we're saying, all right, an item I can be defined in terms of some, sorry, a user can be defined in terms of some row of that matrix, so we can just look at the difference between two users in terms of the difference between those two rows. Okay, so we're going to say to measure the difference between two items I and J, we're going to count the number of users who purchased item I but not J. We're going to count the number of users who purchased item J but not I. Okay, that's all we're going to do. And that's a pretty simple distance measure. Two products are most similar when the Euclidean distance is lowest. So what does that look like? We have four items here, and we have the sets of users who purchased, or the IDs of the users who purchased those four items. So what's the Euclidean distance between 1 and 2? What's the Euclidean distance between 3 and 4? So we just count the number of points where these two vectors are different. I guess this one was purchased by user 6, 35, and 38, whereas item 1 was not. And then items 3 and 4 were purchased by totally disjoint sets of users. So the Euclidean distances are going to look like 3 for the first item versus the second item, and just 1 plus 1, so 2 for the third item versus the fourth item. Okay? So the conclusion we would make then is that items 3 and item 4 are more similar to each other than items 1 and item 2, which I think is somehow a wrong conclusion, right? These two items were purchased by completely disjoint sets of people, whereas these two items were purchased by almost the same set of people. They were just purchased much, 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 much more, so the Euclidean distance turned out to be higher. And yeah, the moral of the story is we need some normalization factor or something. Yes, so Euclidean distance is going to favor very small sets. We should somehow normalize by how popular those two items are. Is everything okay over there? Okay. Yes? Well, it is the Euclidean distance. It's just our vectors are binary vectors, so the Euclidean distance can just be measured by counting. I mean, the vectors are binary vectors here. They need not be binary vectors. They could be other types of feedback, like star ratings or something, as we'll see later. So just to keep things general, we'll call it Euclidean distance, even though for the moment we're really talking about sets. Okay, so Jaccard similarity. We're going to solve it the way you suggested, by normalizing by the size of these things. So we'll take the A intersection B divided by the absolute value of A union B. This is awful. This is just the worst. Let me reset my pen. Which is apparently a thing in this day and age. Yes, that worked apparently. Just had to reset the pen. You got another one? Let's see if this is okay. Well, this is beautiful now. Okay. No worries. All right. So for the user, for the item I and the item J, the difference is going to be the size of the intersection divided by the size of the union of the sets of users who purchased them. So in terms of some, you know, Venn diagrams, we have a set of users who purchased item I. Oh, goodness, it's in the way there. And a set of users who purchased item J. And then we're taking the intersection. So that's UI intersection UJ. And we're dividing it by the size of the union. What am I doing? Okay, so this is going to then take a value that's between 0 and 1, because the intersection is always no bigger than the union, meaning that it'll be 1 only if the intersection is exactly equal to the union, and it'll be 0 if the two sets are totally disjoint. So we now have some kind of similarity measure that says we'll regard two items as being similar if they were purchased by exactly the same set of users, dissimilar if they were purchased by a disjoint set of users, but it's always normalized, so it's independent of the size of the two sets. And that kind of resolves the issue we had with the Euclidean distance. Distance measure number 3, which we'll see why it's useful in a minute, is the cosine similarity. So we're given just our vector representations of these user and item sets. So this is the corresponding row of that matrix. So this would be, you know, x naught, x1, x2, and then pitch black's representation. It was purchased by users 0 and 1. So it's going to look like 1, 1, 0. Harry Potter was purchased by users 1 and 2. So it's going to be 0, 1, 1. And then I'm going to say the similarity between those two things is just going to be the angle between those two purchase vectors. Okay, so what's that going to look like? I'm going to have an angle of 0 if those two things are identical. They were purchased by exactly the same set of users. I would have an angle of, I guess my largest angle here can be 90 degrees, right? These are all positive vectors. Every term can either be 0 or 1. So the largest angle would be if they're totally independent. So if they were purchased by two totally independent groups, they'll be orthogonal vectors. they'll have an angle of 90 degrees. Of course, the angle can actually go down to 180 if I could use the whole space, which I'll see in a minute, but for the moment, all the vectors are positive. So really, we have a number here between, or an angle between 0 and 90 degrees. So we have a cosine of the angle between 0 and 1. So just in case you don't remember your trigonometry, you have theta is equal to the inverse cosine of ui dot uj divided by the magnitude of those two vectors, or the product of magnitudes. So cos theta is equal to ui dot uj divided by ui magnitude times uj magnitude. Okay, that's the cosine similarity. So why might you use this rather than Jacquard similarity? They're kind of getting at exactly the same concept, but Jacquard similarity is defined for sets, whereas cosine similarity is going to be defined for arbitrary vectors. So what if you didn't have something like binary feedback, but you had something like thumbs up, thumbs down? So you didn't just have this big matrix of ones and zeros, but you had a matrix of ones, zeros, and negative ones, where one says you bought something and liked it, zero says you didn't buy something, and one says you bought something but you hated it, right? So, you know, what would we like to happen then? We'd say that, okay, still basically the same results. We get an angle of one if two items were rated by the same users and they both liked them equally. They both had exactly the same opinions about them. We get a cosine similarity of zero still if the two items are totally independent. So they were purchased by different sets of users, regardless of what their opinions were. We get a cosine similarity of negative one when people are evaluating the same things and yet they completely disagree. So we would regard Harry Potter and Pitch Black to be somehow maximally different if, for some reason, the same set of users watched both, but the people who liked Harry Potter hated Pitch Black and vice versa. Okay? All right. So that's Jacquard similarity, cosine similarity. We have one for sets, things like purchases, ones for arbitrary real values, so things like thumbs up, thumbs down. So what if we go from thumbs up, thumbs down to things like star ratings or some kind of continuous feedback or just numerical scores that people might provide to items?
This has been a UC San Diego podcast. For more, visit podcast.ucsd.edu.